Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Local Governments and Reason Giving Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 10, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in T-Mobile South LLC v. City of Roswell. This case concerns whether a document from a state or local government stating that an application has been denied but listing no reasons for the denial can satisfy the Communications Act's in writing requirement. To discuss the case, we have Megan Brown, who is a partner at Wiley Ryan. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Brown.
T-Mobile versus Roswell arises out of a dispute between T-Mobile and a Georgia town over a proposed cell tower. The case concerns a requirement in the 1996 Telecom Act that any decision by a local zoning board denying an antenna siting application, quote, shall be in writing and supported by substantial evidence contained in a written record. The parties here are fighting about the in-writing requirement, specifically whether a written denial must contain the reasons for that denial or whether the in-writing requirement can be satisfied with a one-word written denial, so long as the reasons can be found somewhere in the record associated with the case. This is one of many issues that arise under the Telecom Act, but there's been a longstanding circuit split on this provision. It seems esoteric, but raises several questions about statutory interpretation and federalism. In the argument on November 10th at the Supreme Court, the justices grappled with the practical aspects of local decision-making, as well as bigger questions of federalism and whether federal law here imposes administrative law requirements on local zoning boards. First, a little background. The 1996 Telecom Act contains several provisions that limit the discretion and process available to local governments dealing with siting issues. Why? Because prior to 1996, some localities were very hostile to cell towers and antennas. Local opposition was limiting carriers' ability to deploy sites needed to expand their wireless service. So in the Telecom Act, in particular 47 U.S.C. Section 332, Congress put in place protections for carriers. It prohibited local governments from considering certain issues. It required them to follow procedural impositions, and it sought to speed up deployment by allowing carriers expedited federal court review, which carriers have to seek within 30 days. Despite these good intentions, however, since 1996, carriers in some localities have been litigating under the Act. Some localities game the system. They often have broad local codes that give them freedom to declare applications incomplete, to demand changed technical configurations, to add requirements midway through the process, and hold repeated hearings. Some localities hold hearings and then deny applications with little or no explanation, leaving carriers to sift through the record to determine on what grounds they might be able to appeal to federal court. Carriers sometimes have to play whack-a-mole as boards come up with new hoops to jump through. And in some jurisdictions, delay is the name of the game because the longer applications sit, the harder it is to get fast judicial resolution, and thus the more likely it is the carrier just agrees to a local condition, finds a less effective alternative, or gives up. In response to this continued problem, Congress and the FCC have had to take additional action. The FCC noted applications faced lengthy and unreasonable delays, often years, so it imposed a time limit for zoning boards to decide applications in what's called the shot clock order. Local governments challenged that order but lost at the Supreme Court in 2013 in City of Arlington versus FCC, where the court deferred to the FCC's interpretation. Congress, for its part, in 2012, enacted another provision to mandate the grant of certain unobtrusive modifications. Neither of those actions is directly at issue here, but they do give important context to understand why T-Mobile is having this fight at this time. It's against this backdrop that Roswell arises. After several years of litigation, the case now turns on whether, in denying the application, Roswell complied with the in-writing requirement of Section 332. Back in 2010, T-Mobile had applied to build a tower to address a need in its wireless service. Roswell held public hearings and denied the application. It sent T-Mobile a four-sentence letter that made no attempt to distill any common justification for the denial from among the different views expressed by council members. T-Mobile exercised its right under federal law to seek judicial review. And the federal district court found that Roswell had not followed the in-writing requirement because the city's denial letter failed to cite any specific reasons for its decision. The court found that even where a written administrative record might reflect reasons for denying a permit, allowing that written record to be the writing would contradict the language of the act. The 11th Circuit reversed, finding that a document announcing a bare conclusion of denial can satisfy Section 332. The court said that to the extent a decision has to contain grounds or reasons, it's sufficient if they're contained in a different written document or documents that the applicant has access to. The court found Roswell's action adequate because the town told T-Mobile that the minutes of the hearing could be obtained from the town clerk. The Supreme Court granted T-Mobile's petition for cert. Roswell argues that its denial didn't violate the in-writing requirement because its reasons could be found in the separate record. T-Mobile argues that's not enough. It notes that the minutes were not even provided to it until 26 days after the letter communicating the denial. As a practical matter, this jammed them up on the 30-day period in which to appeal. T-Mobile argues that the written decision itself has to contain both the disposition and its basis. Briefing at the Supreme Court focused in part on the well-recognized circuit split. There, the 11th and the 4th Circuit have taken the more literal view of the in-writing requirement. The 4th Circuit says that a zoning board doesn't need to set forth reasons for a denial and can meet the decision in writing obligation simply by stamping an application denied. The 11th Circuit demands a bit more, but will tolerate a written decision itself having no reasons if the reasons can be gleaned from other documents. By contrast, several courts, like the First and the Sixth Circuit, hold that to survive under Section 332, local zoning boards have to issue a written decision separate from the written record or the minutes, and that decision must have sufficient explanation of the reasons to facilitate judicial review. In the Supreme Court, the parties addressed the circuit split and the meaning of the text used by Congress, in particular the word decision. Several groups filed amicus briefs emphasizing the need for a written decision to contain the reasoning in order to have meaningful judicial review. The Chamber of Commerce brief, which Wiley Ryan filed, argued that in light of the statute's other provisions and its intended operation, a decision in writing has to contain more than simply the bare disposition of denied. Otherwise, the job of a reviewing district court expands to include determining the basis for the denial from among sometimes conflicting record evidence, and only then, once the basis for the denial is determined, can the validity of those reasons be assessed under the substantial evidence standard otherwise applicable in Section 332. The Solicitor General filed a brief in support of neither party. The SG attempted to forge a middle ground, arguing that while the city's failure to provide timely reasons in this particular case for the denial, mandated reversal. Such reasons don't always have to be provided in the written denial itself. At oral argument on November 10th, the justices were interested in some practical questions about what should be expected of local governments handling a siting application. Some justices were troubled by the idea that a decision might rest on multiple grounds, but not tell an applicant what reasoning was controlling. They understood the challenge of trying to ferret out the reasons for a decision, particularly where multiple council members, the public, and experts can testify. But some justices also seem to think that the text wasn't perfectly clear in mandating that those reasons have to be contained in the same document as the denial. Justices Kagan and Ginsburg noted that dictionary definitions of the word decision include bare dispositions, as well as what judges would recognize as opinions containing reasons. T-Mobile's attorney pointed out that the better reading demands that reason giving accompany the decision in order to help expedite a judicial review. He added that the Communications Act repeatedly uses decision in the more expansive sense in several areas, as noted by amici. As for the town, it was not helpful that the minutes they claimed had the reasons were provided 26 days after the denial letter. This bad fact may have led the town to concede that the act requires reasons, and further to agree that those reasons should be given contemporaneously with the decision. At the podium, the town took the less aggressive position that the reasons simply didn't have to be in the decision, but that they must accompany the decision. Justice Kennedy said this seemed to be a change from their position in briefing and wondered if this doomed their case. The town, for its part, explained it didn't because, in their view, the 30 days for appeal under the act shouldn't start until the town provides the required reasons. The town said that in the future, it would be sending denial letters when the minutes were available, giving applicants the decision in writing with reasons, even if those reasons were in multiple documents and required some evaluation. In terms of what the court is likely to do, the court is likely to disagree with the 11th and 4th Circuit's more literal approach. It probably will demand that a town provide reasons at the time of denial, but it's unclear whether the court will address whether that takes the form of a unified written opinion or can be in a separate document. The court really did seem troubled by the burdens facing courts reviewing opaque decisions by local zoning boards. But some weren't convinced that the text mandated that reasons had to be in a particular form. The justices really seemed to struggle with what the most efficient rule would be in the absence of a clear textual command, and they discussed lots of different options, but no consensus emerged. Given the predictability of local zoning and the near certainty of future fights over wireless deployment, the most efficient approach would be to demand that towns identify their reasons clearly and in one unified document. This would keep carriers from having to parse through a voluminous record and identify and contest possible bases for decisions within the tight 30-day window for judicial review. And it would limit at least one narrow but vigorously contested area of litigation over cell sites. The court might adopt the most practical option as the rule, or it could punt, telling localities to state their reasons at the time of denial and leaving future cases to address the form and adequacy of those reasons. This outcome would at least fix the Fourth Circuit's misguided approach, but if the court leaves the form and specifics of local decision makers' reasoning to future cases, they can be assured of continued litigation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.